And now, it's time for Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. For the next 2 hours, join Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Maxa, and this week's special expert guest for fishing information, new techniques to catch more fish, and the most current scoop on what's happening in the water. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Yamaha Outboards. Reliability starts here. By Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup, and Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best. Shimano. Get ready for the fastest 2 hours on radio with the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, and Rock Cod Rick Maxa.
Good morning, anglers, and welcome to Let's Talk Hookup. I'm Pete Gray. Rock Cod Rick Maxa is out of town. Corey Sandin is here today, and we have a couple of great guests. Fishery biologists Lyle and Elena Belquist are here with all the information you need to know about our fisheries and so much more. You stay tuned. This is Southern California Sport Fishing Voice. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the mighty 1090.
When bad weather and rough seas send other boats back to the dock, Seakeeper allows you to fish longer and fish harder, even in the roughest conditions. Don't believe it? Just ask those that have put them on their boat, like Captain Pete Grosbeck and other professionals. Fishing in the trough with Seakeeper basically eliminates the trough. Seakeeper's newest offering, the Seakeeper 3, is optimized to eliminate up to 95% of boat roll on boats between 30 and 39 feet. Even better, this gyro is so small it can fit inside a customized leaning post and operate on your current battery system, making installation fast and easy. Watch for new product coming soon. The Seakeeper for boats. Think about it. Eliminate up to 95% of boat roll on your boat. That is amazing. To learn more about how Seakeeper can change your life on the water and to schedule your free demo, go to seakeeper.com. Take a ride, be amazed. Seakeeper.
Hey, it's time for the 30-second Power Pro Seminar. Here's the hot tip for those of us that like to fish with small reels for big fish. Fill your spools with Power Pro Max Quattro. It's 25% thinner than standard Power Pro. That means you're going to get more line on that small reel. Plus, you can fly line your bait more effectively. Here's another tip about Power Pro Max Quattro. Your casting distance will increase in addition to increasing your spool capacity. So downsize your tackle and use Power Pro Max Quattro. Check powerpro.com for more information.
There are plenty of boat slips and marinas in San Diego, but there is only one Kona Kai. It's not just a place to park your boat. It's a way of life here in America's finest city. Come check out what's new at the Kona Kai. 170 luxury guest rooms, including 41 brand new suites, featuring contemporary island-inspired decor, deep soaking tubs, and oversized balconies. The Kona Kai Resort Spa and Marina has multiple swimming pools and a private beach, waterfront restaurants, and an award-winning spa, most of which is included for marina tenants. Add the Kona Kai Club to your membership and you have access to the new Paloma Pool Bar, a new and exclusive pool area for adults only, which allows guests to enjoy poolside craft cocktails and California coastal cuisine while overlooking your boat. In addition to all this, Kona Kai is the closest marina to the open ocean. Check resortkonakai.com on the web for more information to reserve a slip or inquire about joining the club. The Kona Kai Resort, much more than just a place to park your boat.
We all need to get around, but we all need something different from our vehicles. Your San Diego County Ford dealers have you covered if you're looking for a new truck this month. Plus, it's SUV season, so they have great deals for everyone. Whether it's a new EcoSport that is nimble and fun around town, or the Ford Explorer that is capable of putting a boat in the water and has seating for seven, Ford has you covered. Ford trucks and SUVs aren't just powerful and legendary. They have the latest technology that helps you seamlessly connect your smartphone and ensure you're safe on the road. Features like Pro Trailer Backup Assist on trucks are truly a game changer at the ramp, helping you back up a trailer by simply turning a knob on the dash and doing the hard work for you. So check out all the great deals during SUV season and save some money on the right gear for you. Learn more at buyfordnow.com or visit your San Diego County Ford dealers today. They'll be glad to hook you up.
All right. Good morning. Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. And this is one of those shows I really look forward to.
Yes, indeed. It's going to be really fun, Corey. Lyle and Elena Belquist, good morning.
Morning.
Lady and gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks for coming. Lyle, you do a lot of work people are familiar with,
uh-huh.
With bass tagging.
Yep.
If you've ever been out in the in the water and caught one of these little bass with a little yellow tag hanging out.
And some of them aren't so little anymore.
That's a little, yeah. So how's that work going?
Really well. We started tagging calicos and sand bass and spotties back in 2012. We tagged over 16,000 of them, 16 or 17,000 of them, in about a 3 or 4 year period.
That's a lot of bass.
Yeah, and that program has now expanded into a it's become part of a statewide program called the CCFRP that's split between six different universities up and down the coast. And we're still running trips. It's done under a little bit different context, but we're still measuring and tagging fish, you know, inside and outside the marine protected areas, learning all about their movement patterns and population size and post-release mortality, all sorts of things.
And you started it. I mean, pretty much. Yeah, you're the one that spearheaded.
I started the program in Southern California, and there was another group that had the CCFRP up and running out of Moss Landing. And so we all kind of merged because the statewide push seemed like a really valuable and really impactful way to go.
Yeah, how interesting. You know, I'm fortunate enough, I did a few seminars with you and learned a lot myself. And I think one of the biggest things I learned was that these tagged fish are caught, again, the second or third, fourth time.
Oh, yeah.
Less than a quarter of a mile, is it, from where they were originally?
Our shortest time at Liberty for a tagged fish was about 1 minute.
Well, not only the shortest time, but the distance that they're re-caught again.
And 1 minute later, we were still on the same spot. You know, we were on anchor.
That's so crazy.
So, I mean, it just goes to show you how, you know.
Little impact.
Yeah. I mean, catch and release does not stress these fish out when they're on the chew. So
he wants to eat.
Yeah.
Man, he's going to eat. There's a sardine right there.
You can catch a fish over and over like that. I mean, we had hundreds of recaptures within a day or two or 3 days of being caught within roughly the same area. So catch and release is not stressing these fish
out when
you handle them the right way.
Right.
What is the furthest you've caught one from a location?
From its original tagging.
Yeah.
We had a sand bass from the Point Loma area get recaptured up off Dana Point. It was about 78 miles was the farthest. Uh-huh. We had some sand bass from Point Loma go south into Mexican waters around the Coronado Islands, so that's not too surprising. But fish crossing borders is always something that's worth knowing.
Sure.
But some of the fish that travel those distances were not big. I mean, we're talking 12, 13-inch fish that traveled 50, 60 miles.
And mostly sand bass, the spotties, and the calicos don't really move much?
On average, I mean, the vast majority of recaptures that we get are all within about 500 yards of where they were initially tagged.
That's what's crazy.
So they maintain pretty tight home ranges.
That's the eye opener right there, you know,
is
that you could have a calico that you catch, you know, let's say like right off Dana Point, and that's kind of its home.
Yeah, I mean, each kelp bed really is that fish's home when we're talking about calicos.
Like it might go to one side of the kelp bed for the current or for, you know, maybe the smelt on the inside or maybe the sardine are coming through the outside and the barracuda are pushing them in or something.
Yep. Yeah, and we saw seasonally depth migration. So, I mean, if you fish bass a lot, you know, in the summertime, fish tend to be up a little higher. You can catch them closer to the surface. In the wintertime, you're kind of fishing a little bit down deeper. But the acoustic telemetry work that we did where we have depth-sensitive transmitters reflected the same thing, so we can look at those vertical migrations of these fish on a seasonal basis and learn what depths they're really at.
That's crazy.
Wow.
From shallow boiler rocks out to the outer edge of the kelp, 90 foot of water.
Wow. And we had a whole array of acoustic receivers around the La Jolla kelp bed, both inside and outside the reserves. So we've been able to piece together the horizontal and vertical migrations of these fish over the year and a half long battery life of those transmitters. So we could see calicos grouping up to spawn in late spring and early summer. We could see sand bass migrating away to go spawn in other places.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And I remember talking with you during the seminar, and it really hadn't been documented, the calico spawn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I remember actually visually seeing it. It was probably like 8 years ago that I saw it where just not only a cloud. I mean, that's what, you know, guys kind of refer it to them, a cloud, but this was like a tornado of them.
Yeah.
Like they were going in a circle,
really?
And it, I mean, there were thousands of them, and they were literally, it looked like, if you can imagine, like 30 strands of kelp all together,
yep.
And then leaning over at the top with the current, that's exactly what the cone or spiral
shape of the school looked like.
Exactly, and they were going tightly in a circle.
I've never seen that.
That's yeah, cool. It was pretty crazy, and you kind of told me they're broadcast spawn. They're
yep.
doing their spawn.
Yeah, oftentimes when fish spawn, they rise up into the water column to take advantage of the local currents that'll spread the eggs and larvae around. So you'll get, sometimes it's just a small number of females. Sometimes it's only one female that'll rise up in the water column and spread her eggs. And you may have one individual male. You may have hundreds of males going up and releasing their gametes in the water at the same
really?
Time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what did you learn? Did you learn from the vertical, from the migration vertically or depth, that they're temperature sensitive? Is that why they're migrating up and down?
Yep. Yep.
They
so
are.
Yep. So one of the things, and this has been found in tagging projects in other labs, like Chris Lowe's lab up in Long Beach State. When you have a really consistent thermocline set up, and you have warmer water on the top and cooler water on the bottom, that sets up the right conditions for the spawning. So they'll migrate at certain times when that thermocline gets just right.
Interesting. But they don't like the colder. It must be colder down
mm-hmm.
below, so
yep.
they're going in winter. Why are they not staying at the surface where it may be a little bit warmer?
In the wintertime?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of times in winter, the water's more mixed, so the thermocline goes away completely.
Or dissipated or a lot less. It might only be a couple degree difference.
Yeah. Whereas in the summertime, you'll have a much stronger thermocline.
Yeah. Maybe warmer on the top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe 10 to 15 degrees.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now, Elena, so you do different type of work. You've worked with Lyle, of course, but you've done your own thing with the Sport Fishing Association of California, still doing all that. And what we learned, too, is that you're kind of responsible that we're allowed to fillet tuna right now, too.
Yeah, so I've been working with SAC for going on 6 years now, which has been really awesome. When I finished grad school, I think that was in 2012. I was involved with Lyle tagging work back then.
That's how you guys met?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Kind of a romantic story, if I might say
it
myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, we met on the deck of the Sea Watch or the Outer Limits.
The Outer Limits.
The Outer
Limits. Come on, Ken's listening. The Outer Limits.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was an assistant, a data recording assistant, and turned out I actually learned how to fish pretty well and really got to learn about the recreational fishing industry here because I came from the commercial monitoring, electronic monitoring of commercial fisheries back up in BC. So Lyle was my introduction to how big recreational fishing is down here. I really did not understand the scope of it down here. And then I met Ken, and I'm still
Ken
here.
From Sport Fishing Association.
Yeah, my boss.
Yeah,
Ken. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do you do with SAC? What kind of work do you do now?
Yeah, so I basically am responsible for connecting the management and the researchers to the fleet. So NOAA or the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and groups like Scripps, and looking for opportunities for the fleet, the party boat fleet, to work together with them. So if there's data gaps. For example, the bluefin tuna project we've been working on, we can access the knowledge of the fleet and provide that information to the managers, and then they can better manage the fisheries. So I get to, scope out projects like that. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
sure.
And it's really unprecedented. I mean, there's not many places where you have the fishing industry actively participating in the fishery science and management of the resource where you have everybody working together. It's pretty cool.
And being willing to do so.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't sort of an overnight thing, right? It took getting the trust of the fleet, obviously. I was, I came in from Scripps, and that was a little unconventional.
Mm-hmm.
But Ken definitely had the foresight to see the benefit. Working with the fleet, and it's been over 5 years now, and it's been really rewarding on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
You've been able to bring real science to the picture.
Yeah, yeah. So
not just guest science.
Yeah, like the tuna length frequency
obviously, everyone here is aware of what was going on with bluefin tuna a few years ago.
Right.
The stock assessment came out, and there was concerns with the health of the stock. And we wanted to provide some data from what we're seeing in our local waters. And so we pitched that to NOAA, and they were on board. And it's been sort of hand in hand. But the neat thing about the bluefin tuna work we've been doing is that the captains and the crew members are collecting the data themselves at sea. So this information that wasn't being harnessed before because you needed, you know, a lot of it was being collected dockside by the fisheries managers. We said, hey, these guys are on the water. They live on the water. And we train them to collect this information. And now we have going on a 5-year data set, which is just incredible. I look at it and I can't believe what we've done. You know, we've measured thousands of these fish and provide it to NOAA, which will be used in future stock assessments. So it's really cool to go back to the fleet and say what you're doing is influencing management in a very direct way.
Sure. Is the stock healthy?
It's coming back.
It's improved.
And when we say it's coming back, we're talking about the entire North Pacific stock.
It's an international issue.
Yes.
Yeah. We can do our best here, but you've got multiple countries.
Yeah. Fish migrating from Japan to California.
Sure.
Back,
yeah. Right? And we can't control what they're doing. Yeah.
But there have been, in 2015 is when the assessment came out, and big changes were made in multiple countries. And they did another assessment, I think it was last year, and they've seen improvement.
Yeah, that's good.
Which is a big deal. When you have a decline, show a reversal.
Yes.
You know, even if you're still at a relatively low state, that reversal is a huge positive sign.
Yeah. So things can improve. I mean, I think, and you look at the calico bass.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, look at that. I mean, everybody, it was going to be the disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Five fish limit, 14-inch size limit.
And it truly was a scary thing to begin
with. Yes, indeed.
The counts went way down when that minimum size limit went up to 14 inches.
Yeah, for maybe...
It took a couple years?
I think it was three.
Yeah,
I think
like
the fourth
years.
Year.
Yeah.
I think it was the fourth year the counts were bouncing back.
Yep.
But to be able to go out, you know, prior to that... Middle of the summer, hot water, 70-degree water, and the little fish were up, and you could take smaller baits and go have a 70-fish day, you know, 50 to 80-fish day, and have a great time and have fun. A lot of them were 11 to 13-inch, and you know, I mean, on the smaller end is what I'm saying. If you just went through small baits and that's what you're targeting. But it's today you could go out and throw small baits, and there's so many 13 to 15-inch fish, and there's such a big difference between a 12-inch and a 14-inch in weight wise, I mean, it's like maybe double, you know, at least like 80% more in weight. And
that is awesome to hear. I mean, that is the exact reason why regulations like this are put into place. Anytime you have a chance to bump up the minimum size limit of something, you give that species a larger opportunity for spawning. And, if you can just wait out that period that it takes for them to grow from, say, 12 to 14 inches, you know, there's a lot of benefit at the end of that.
And that's where the laws were set in effect prior, were that 12-inch, they had that year class to spawn. That was, you know, theoretically their first spawn.
Mm-hmm.
And given the 14-inch limit now, they maybe have another three. They have 4 years total maybe to spawn.
Yep.
And
takes them that long to grow from 12 to 14 inches?
Yeah, it takes them, yep, about that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So a 12-inch fish had a couple of spawns. Now a 14-inch fish has a couple more. So we just, you know, by bumping up that minimum size limit, we doubled the entire spawning potential of the whole population.
Wow. Fantastic.
Roughly.
And truly, if you're into harvesting, if you're into going out and catching your limit of calicos or sand bass or whatever it is, those five fish now are going to way outweigh any 10 fish 12-inch limit.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, keeping five fish at 14-inch are way going to outweigh 10 fish at 12-inch.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep.
Yeah, you look at there's some big spotties around, too, because 14-inch spotties, a big fish.
That's
right?
A big fish.
I was surprised that the regulation was across the board for all three species.
But, but that's most of the guys are enthusiastic about catch and release, and the guys that are really hardcore about it and catching spotted bay bass, fish in Mission Bay, San Diego, Oceanside Harbor, you know, even Long Beach, and so enthusiastic, they're happy to let them go. Mm-hmm. So to see a 14-inch size limit on the spotty is double thumbs up, mm-hmm. truly. Yeah.
This from a guy that makes his living,
right?
Catch and release on the local saltwater right. bass, right? This guy knows his stuff when it comes to bass, right? And he should.
Just a little bit.
He knows, he needs to know. So big announcement this past week from NOAA about a rockfish, right, Elena and Lana, right?
Very exciting.
So rockfish regulations totally confuse me.
They confuse a lot of people.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
And
don't ask
me. You know, you just
questions.
Go out there and scratch your head. And, so what's going to happen? It was 75 fathoms coming in January 1st, but actually it'll take effect in Southern California March 1st, right?
Yeah, if everything goes as planned, it has to go through the Office of...
The Office of Administrative Law.
Yeah, that's the final step.
Which is all, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's expected to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the previous depth limit was 60 fathoms. It's bumping out to 75. And that's on the mainland coast. And then the western Cowcod Conservation Area, the depth limit gets bumped out from 20 to 40 fathoms. Which is a big deal. Just that area alone, I think it adds another 110 square miles of fishable area.
Wow.
And that's just out in that offshore spot. So if you... looked at the mainland area, you're talking a lot of fishing area being added.
So when you're talking the mainland area, the 75 fathoms would be the coastal area.
Mm-hmm.
The outside area with 40 fathoms would be San Clemente Island, Catalina Island, Santa Barbara Island, Tanner, Cortez Bank.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yep.
So it'll access areas like Mark Wish was talking about, the Lincott potentials some of those areas are going to be amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they did just implement along those regulations. So they bumped out the depth limit. They made scorpion fish, sculpin, year-round, which had a closed season. And actually, for the last few years, they've closed it early because we came close to catching our limit. They're sculpin. But then they also reduced Lincott from two fish to one fish.
Oh, okay,
so that's
two fish to one fish.
Yeah, so there's some give and take when, you know.
Still 22 inches?
I think so.
Yeah. So the other thing they talked about is the amazing recovery of the LOI. Is it the LOI and also the Boccaccio, right?
Cowcod and Boccaccio.
Boccaccio.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So cowcod are coming back. We're seeing really strong signs.
Still no take on those.
Still no take. They're still protected species. The population, I mean, cowcod are one of our longest, slowest growing, oldest lived species, pretty iconic in that way. So they're really sensitive to overfishing, so we need to be careful. But they are coming back in a big way. I mean,
the original projected recovery date was
2068.
Whoa!
And now it's 2020?
2021 or something like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. And Boccaccio, of course, anybody that rockfishes knows Boccaccio is just like...
Oh, they're everywhere.
They're like vermin.
Yeah. Yeah, we started off with 8 or 9 species that were considered overfished, and now we're at 2, cowcod and yellowhead.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think bronze-spotted, but there's not much research that's been done on bronze-spotted. We don't know much about the status of that population.
Bronze-spotted.
You rarely come across bronze.
Really? Get on that, Lyle. Come on.
I know.
Tag another 40,000.
There's only a handful of guys who know where to go to find those things.
You're tagging rockfish too, right?
Yeah, we've tagged a bunch of rockfish over the last couple of years. We've tagged several thousand out at the 270 off La Jolla, Point Loma, Imperial Beach. We were measuring post-release survival of cowcod in certain areas, finding that... even rockfish, when you bring them up to the surface and they're completely bloated and their stomach's coming out of their mouth and their eyes are popping out of their heads, when you get them back down to the bottom with descending devices, you get surprisingly high survival rates. I mean, Boccaccio, you're getting, we're seeing 85, 90% survival rate.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you use these devices, they do work.
They work.
You
use them. And
even cowcod, which look really bloated. I mean, the barotrauma that they experience is a big deal, and those things survive.
Let's say you're fishing at 40 fathoms, 240 feet,
mm-hmm.
and you bring up a fish. How far should you descend that fish?
So the research that we've done shows that you should get them at least halfway down.
At least.
All the way to the bottom is ideal. But I would say at least halfway down will give the fish
as quickly as possible.
As quickly.
Time is critical.
Absolutely right.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, as you can hear, we have a lot of information. We just scratched the surface, Corey.
There's a ton of information, Pete. I mean, from the bass and the inshore to the rockfish and the tuna, and like your Santa Elena being responsible for us being able to bring, you know, a filleted tuna to the dock, and some of those regulations are pretty interesting too. And we got a full 2 hours ahead of us, and a really fun show. And if you want to join us, give us a shout at 877-792-1090 and 858-457-1090. We're giving away a full-day trip on the San Diego out of Seaforth Sport Fishing.
How about that?
Can't ask for a better a better ride than that. And having Lyle and Elena in studio, and give us a call. Join us on Let's Talk Hookup on the Mighty 1090. We're going to be right back.
Happy holidays from Fisherman's Landing Tackle. This is Doug Kern. Be sure to get that saltwater angler on your list what they really want, a gift from Fisherman's Landing Tackle and Penn. We have the best Penn has to offer, including International VISX, Fathom 2-Speed, Torque 2-Speed, Fathom Star Drag, and so much more. Bottom line, we have the most complete selection of Penn saltwater tackle and the knowledge to help you pick out the perfect gift. Check out our huge selection at saltwatertackle.com or come by and see us at Fisherman's Landing Tackle at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego.
Hey, this is Jeff from Sagos Kayak Fishing. 2018 was a fantastic season on Sagos, and we are so jazzed for 2019. We are the only tour group serving Sagos that is now flying all of our trips conveniently from Southern California. Yep, you heard me right. SoCal. No more rod fees, no more overweight charges, no more parking fees, no more border waits. Just a nice private charter flight down to the island where we will have you fishing that day. That's right. We arrive at Sagos by 10 a.m., so be prepared to fish hard that first day. Yep, all included here at Sagos Kayak Fishing. Don't want to fish from a kayak? No problem, as we have also added a brand new custom 28-foot Super Ponga to our lineup to accommodate our growing demand to provide Ponga trips. We are the small group specialists. If you are looking for a more custom-style trip with a personal feel, Sagos Kayak Fishing is your spot. Visit our website at www.sagoskayakfishing.com or just give me a call at 760-412-2507 to secure your spot.
Turner's Outdoorsman, Southern California's number one shooting, hunting, and fishing tackle retailer since 1971, is right in your neighborhood. Now 19 stores and more to come throughout Southern California. No one does it better. Turner's Outdoorsman brings you the best prices and selection, plus a knowledgeable staff that will help make your day on the water or in the field more fun. Stop by your neighborhood Turner's Outdoorsman to find a location nearest you. Check the web at turners.com and sign up for special deals and more.
One of the dream trips for most anglers is Alaska. There are so many lodges. How do you make a choice? It's easy. Choose the one most Let's Talk Hookup listeners return to time after time. Kingfisher Charters in Sitka, Alaska. No one does it better than Kingfisher Charters. They offer the best service, the most comfortable accommodations, fantastic food, and the finest charter captains in Sitka. All for the ultimate value. One visit and you will understand why nobody beats Kingfisher Charters. Sitka is famous for some of the best runs of salmon in Alaska. And if giant Alaskan halibut is your target, the expert captains at Kingfisher Charters know the hot spots and can put you on a fish of a lifetime. Plenty of rockfish and huge ling cod are there too. And when it comes to fish processing, the best in Alaska is Kingfisher Charters. It's all included in your package. In fact, everything is included except tips. It is truly amazing how the Kingfisher crew continues the quality of service they deliver year after year. Kingfisher Charters, 800-727-6136. Or check kingfishercharters.com.
XERS 1090 AM Rosarito, Baja California.
San Diego's sports leader.
The home of ESPN Radio.
The Mighty 1090.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup on the Mighty 1090. And, man, a lot of information, a lot of knowledge right here.
We're talking your language, Corey.
I love it.
Yeah. Making that bass population that much better. So
bring it on.
Catch and release.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, when was the last time you kept the calico bass?
It's been 7, 8, 9 years, and it's only because it died, and I didn't want to feed it to the sea lion or a pelican, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I can't remember the last time I kept a calico bass.
Right? I mean,
population just come. I mean, I'm not saying it's not, it's okay, the 5-fish limit. It's
absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's a manageable.
They're tasty.
Thing, right?
They're really tasty.
They're delicious. Yeah.
Right?
They absolutely are delicious.
Yeah. Some of the best ceviche.
And if you get a 14-inch fish, you got some real meat there.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So that is a sustainable population.
Definitely. Kelp bass fishery is as strong as it's ever been that I've seen. And looking back at historical data, it's tough to say. I mean, I have some old photos from the 50s of guys holding up stringers of
100 fish,
8, 10 pound yeah, fish, you know, right. and that's a different story. But the status of the population right now is really good. Sand bass, a little bit different. We need to focus more on sand bass.
What happened to sand bass?
Sand bass are really vulnerable to overfishing because they form highly predictable spawning aggregations that we all remember fishing on, you know, 10, 15 years ago. We would go out and you'd just have tons and tons of boats out there fishing on the spawning aggregations, and it's just they're really susceptible to that. So I think they've taken a big hit. There's also been climate changes and water changes that have occurred over time, but the scale of fishing during the spawning season on those spawning aggregations has been massive, and we've seen those spawning aggregations virtually disappear over the last five or 6 years.
So what's is it going to recover, or can we get it to recover?
Well, so initially when the bass regulations went in place back in 2013, when they reduced the bag limit and increased the minimum size limit, the hope was that that's all that would need to be done for barred sand bass. And as we've seen, calicos have bounced back pretty quickly, but sand bass have not. Sand bass landings have continued to plummet. And we've kind of stopped fishing them in those traditional June, July, August spots.
Because they're not there, right?
Because they're just not there. So there's definitely more work that needs to be done on that front.
It'll be interesting to see if it's a migratorial kind of where we're in a warm water cycle or whatever. If we get in a colder water cycle, and you know, I don't mean to relate it to albacore, but it kind of is.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Albacore, barracuda, sand bass.
Yes.
You know, it's
some years fish show up and other years they don't. For sand bass, what I would say to that is, you know, there are other spawning aggregations, like in San Quintin, for example, that have been pretty consistent over time. Other parts of Baja where the water is share similar characteristics here where the spawning aggregations have been consistent over time. And now we're at a point where we've seen fairly normal oceanographic conditions and really warm oceanographic conditions over the last 5-6 years.
Right.
So I'm starting to look less towards the changes in spawning dynamics being a function of oceanography completely. And I'm starting to think more about just the scale of fishing that's gone on last, 50 years.
Right. I got you. And then some of those areas like Ensenada Bay and like you're saying, San Martin area and Sac Reef, they all kind of have their own little microclimate, for lack of a better term, where they get the upwelling and they get the cold water. And even on where the water temperature is near 80 degrees, but yet on the intercoastal, it might still be in the 60s.
Yep.
And keep those sand bass and stuff happy. So hopefully that kind of stuff will help the spawn and help the help it out for our local.
Absolutely.
It's great to see it come back.
Yeah.
Are they as slow growing as calico?
No, they grow almost exactly the same rate.
Same
as
rate?
Calicos, yeah.
So an 8-pound calico, how old?
Oh, gosh.
Right? Just pulling it right out of your head.
I know. You would ask me that.
Sorry.
And well, how about this?
Calico's probably 15, I would guess.
15 years old.
Yeah.
How about if I ask this? How about like a 22-inch fish?
Well, let's see. So
Could you do it better that way?
Yeah. 22-inch. Oh, God.
Which would be roughly in that,
I need
that
to
category?
See, I need to see the curve right
I gotcha,
in front of
I gotcha.
Me again to remember.
But you
they're very slow.
Yeah.
What's the oldest fish you've ever...
There's a good one.
Ooh, good question.
Yeah.
Oldest bass or oldest fish?
Oldest bass.
Like reliving your PhD.
Right?
No kidding. I think we had about a 9-pound fish that was 21, 22 years old.
Okay.
Was it a calico?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And see, in my mind, I thought it would have been like twice, like 40 years old.
Well, the oldest calico that's ever been aged, I think, is about 34.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that was... Again, that was still probably like an 11-pound fish,
right,
12-pound fish,
right.
And there have been bigger fish caught than that. So
we
know they get older than that.
Okay,
so
oldest
cool.
fish now that you've ever
Oh, gosh.
Dated.
There's some, let's see, some rockfish up in the 40s.
Like the
Which is nothing for rockfish. I mean, yeah, their rough eye rockfish get 80, 90 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
For some of the species.
Yeah, there's
100 plus?
Yeah.
Like some of the rockfish?
Yeah, cold water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like ones we catch in Alaska, like the yellow eye.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're old, right? Yeah. You catch those big yellow eye, they're 50, 60 years old.
Yeah, cow cod, again, cow 60, cod 70 too. Years old.
That's
yeah.
crazy. Yeah.
That amazing.
Kind of wrap my mind around it, really.
Yeah,
you know?
But they live in cold water.
Yeah, they do. They do. The metabolism's a little bit different down there. I mean, a cow cod doesn't even become mature until, to the best of our knowledge right now, about 17 years old.
17
Which
years
is why
old.
They're so susceptible.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because they don't even spawn until they're, like, really old.
Yeah.
Like teenagers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
All
good
right.
information.
Yeah, that's really good. All right. A line open at 858-457-1090. Or 877-792-1090, your chance to win a trip on the San Diego out of C4 Sport Fishing. Let's jump into it, Corey.
Let's do it. Let's talk to Chuck. Chuck's calling from Dana Point. Good morning, Chuck. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Chuck.
Good morning, you guys. Thanks for all the hard work. I really see it paying off with the sculpin. They're just piled up in the rocks. But my problem is the sheephead fillet. Are we going to still have to bring them home, whole carcass, just gutted and fillet them? What's the problem with that? Is that the color changes they go through that they can't tell by the patch of skin? And you would think the lane cod would be the oldest thing out there. They're so ugly. But, man, there's some prizes going to be had with that new deeper water. I can't wait.
Yep, absolutely. I'm not sure what the max age on a lane cod is. I'd have to go back and find that. But some of the – I'm sure lane cod get pretty old, too, just like the other rockfishes. I can't remember off the
top. And probably grow relatively fast with it being a 22-inch size limit, right? Because that's, again, the sexual maturity
yep.
for spawning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is the link cod we catch here the same link cod we catch up north, like in Canada or Alaska?
How many stocks are there? There's been some work.
Species,
yeah, it's the same species. I'm just curious if genetically, if there's different stocks up and down the coast. I feel like maybe there are. There's some work out of Moss Landing that's been done on that, but I'm not sure if it's been finalized yet.
Okay, here's another one. What makes the meat turn green? How come some are like
that's
have
true.
Green meat?
Oh,
and,
no.
Huh?
Yeah, you're right.
How come some don't have white meat and some have green meat? Is there an explanation for that?
No, there isn't. There's been some work done on it. There's been some articles written on it.
But you know what's interesting about that, now that I'm thinking about it just in a few seconds, is the skin color changes like a chameleon with where they're living. If they're living around the reddish, vegetation, then they're.
You might find, you might find some similar colored meat there.
Well, and that's what similar. I'm kind of saying. I mean, they can actually change the pigment of their skin, mm-hmm. so maybe it's all associated and related because a lot of the, not coral, but a lot of the rock and substrate actually kind of retains a turquoise color.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And a lot of times, and this is true for many species, they just kind of mirror the habitat that they're living in
right.
at any given time. I mean, a calico that's swimming up in the water column a lot will have a lot paler color.
A much brighter influence.
Yeah.
The one living in the boiler rock,
hidden
away in the depth.
A lot darker sort of color.
Super dark, yeah.
For sure. Hey, thanks a lot for the phone call this morning. Here's the man from the bass capital of the world. You know who this is, Elena?
I have no clue.
Well,
I'm excited to find out.
Good morning, Don Hanson.
Oh, yeah,
oh
good morning,
my dear, dear Don.
Good morning to everyone there.
Good morning.
First of all, without Elena, we'd still be trying to figure out what we're doing. I have to give her all the credit for you didn't talk about deflating a sheephead yet, but she worked very difficult times on that, trying to get that done. You know, and the management issue where I have been for the last 40-some years, all the fishermen are anecdotal information. We saw these fish. Yeah, that's fine, but that there really is no science to it. But with her working on it, we now have the science to back it up, and the people now believe what we tell them. And so it's been a real asset for SAC to have her doing that work with us on the wind, on tuna and rockfish. And she even made a trip on a bait boat to show the state of California how live bait is captured by Everingham. So.
Really?
My hat's off to her. So
that must have been fun.
Thank you very much, Don.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can ask her how much fun it was because she was there at 4 or midnight or whatever time it was. But and then the capturing of the sheephead, that was an issue that's been going on for, God, probably 20 years. Can we flay sheephead? Yep. And she went and got a hold of it and went out and did it, and now we can flay sheephead. So
that's a great thing for Dana Worth Sport Fishing and Other Landings, right, Elena?
Yeah, we can't quite do it just yet. I think March 1st.
March 1st.
Yeah, but it's, you know, we're anticipating.
There's going to be a minimum size limit. It's fillet size limit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fillet. It's this is typical same thing as calico bass or sand bass and stuff like that. But,
yeah.
You know, you're talking about the bass capital of the West. I've been in this business for 80 years, and we've been fishing calico bass for as long as I've been able to. I worked for the department for many, many years on the size limit on calico bass. I've been looking at calico bass for a good 75 years. The stock varies as the ocean conditions vary, but it's pretty reliable, pretty attainable stock to be around.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Only 75 years, Don, that's it?
Well, I've got 85 years of listening to Elena, but...
Lucky you.
Yeah. Well,
so lucky. But anyway, it's really... And Lyle's done a fantastic job of the bass, and I think with his work with the other side, he works for somebody else there, too, if he didn't even tell you that, but he... Yeah, he can. We might be able to get in some of these closed areas that we've been chased out of for the last 7-8 years. I think there's all kinds of chances to do things that with the science behind us now that we didn't have before. And you know, and I tell you very seriously that anecdotal science does not go very far. Real science does, and it gets things done, and we can work from there. But anyway, thanks for letting me get on the radio and tell you what a good job she's done, and Lyle, and thanks, Let's Talk Hookup, for what they do.
Thanks, Don.
Yeah, appreciate that. And you're right, Don. Thanks for what you do, especially, too, is all the support to all these different programs that happen. But without these two right here and several others that do this work that is real science, that takes the people that really don't spend time on the water like these guys do, we'd be in trouble, right?
That's exactly right. And the real science is what we're looking for. They're getting more and more, you know, we're a whole thing is based science. We're science-based operation, and we have to be, and that's why, you know, they told me that in my lifetime, Cowcat would never rebuild, and I'm starting to get worried now because Cowcat's almost rebuilt. I think I got a couple more weeks to live, so.
Come on.
It's happening. It's happening.
But, things change. The ocean changes.
Yes, it does.
We do have one thing left that we have to correct, and that's the 14-mile and 60-mile bank. With that getting out to 70 fathoms, we got to have some RCA lines around the 14 and around the 60 so we can, but there's no lines there yet, so we have to draw lines and figure that one out. So 60 and the 14 are still off limits to catch rockfish, and so there's a little work to do there, but I think we can get it done, and we will get it done. So
the reason is the top is below 40 fathoms, right?
Roger.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, Don, thanks for all you do. Don Hanson. One of the founding fathers, if not the
Thank you guys very much.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate it very much.
Definitely some good stuff. I mean, you figure Don fishing Dana Point before it was even a harbor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And he calls it the bass. They call it the bass capital of the West. I think it's the bass capital of the world.
Right?
Got to be.
Right? Bring it on.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and jump back in the phone.
Let's do it. Let's talk to Jim. Jim's calling from Encinitas. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup this morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Morning. Merry Christmas and a great show today, as always.
Thanks.
I have a question for Lyle and Elena. I've been on several of your tagging trips and really appreciate the research you guys are doing. My concerns today are about sheep's head, and with the new interest in this fish sort of exploding, what are your concerns about that fishery, given the slow growth rate of these fish and the size and bag limits that we currently have?
Good question.
Great question.
Thanks.
So, a lot of work has been done on sheephead all throughout Southern California and Baja. And as a lot of people know, sheephead are sex-changing fish. They're protogynous hermaphrodites, so they start off female, and given certain social cues, they'll turn into male, and male fish will have that.
Can I ask you something on that?
Yeah, shoot.
And I was trying to explain this to Dinora, and it sounds so strange to somebody who doesn't fish and understand fish. Can they change from female to male, like you just said,
yep.
But then when they realize that they need more females within the stock? Can it change back to female?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't
okay.
think we found that.
So it's just one.
It's one time deal.
Which is still strange enough, right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And so a lot of wrasses do it. Sheepheader in the wrasse family, labrids. So a lot of wrasses do it. Some groupers do it. But anyway, so a lot of work has been done learning about the physiology of sheephead, the dynamics of the population all around Southern California and Baja. And we've seen signs of impact in a spatial sense. So places like Catalina Island, for example, sheephead are turning to male much earlier than they do at more remote places that don't get the same amount of pressure. So places like San Nick or Santa Barbara, they turn male much later. Out at Cortez Bank, for example, you have a ton of large males out there. So a lot of large males is indicative of a healthier population, right? Anytime you have size structure that shows a distribution of sizes in the upper ranges, you know, that's indicative of a healthier population.
So does that mean the sign of the smaller fish means that they need those males to change
yep.
to spawn.
Yep.
And so there's not the population of males to
right. And so we're seeing sort of patchiness in terms of overall impact. Places like Baja, less impact, so we see really healthy populations. And in the more remote areas of the bight, like the offshore banks and the islands farther out, healthier populations. And then in the closer islands and on the mainland coast, we see fish changing sex a little bit earlier than they probably should. So there is some impact that needs to be looked at.
So is it still a 10-fish limit for sheephead?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. 10 fish and is it 12-inch minimum 12 size? Inch.
12
yeah.
inch. And what's your thought on that?
12, I think they mature right around 10.5 inches.
So they'll change?
10 inches. Yeah,
depending on the population.
That's like the earliest that they will,
yeah.
or excuse me, the smallest. So there's still some room for spawning there, but you know, they could probably benefit from an increase in minimum size limit, just like the basses. But nobody's really addressed that. No one's really talked about that at all.
I just don't anticipate being allowed to fillet them at sea negatively impacting the population.
Yeah.
In
no,
any
that has
place.
No impact.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so that was the regulation changes now that. It's the only species at sea that can't be filleted on the party boats that we work with.
Right.
So it just permits them to be filleted at yeah. sea by experts, by the crew members,
right.
deckhands.
That was great. I mean, it's the last species that crews couldn't fillet.
Yeah, so you're taking on the whole carcass. I don't really know how to fillet fish, but you know, apparently they're not the easiest ones to.
No, they're not.
They have thicker rib bones
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? Even their skin, you know.
Yeah. So a 12-inch sheephead's a nice size sheephead, though.
Yeah.
So that's the minimum. Hey, thanks a lot for the call this morning. Appreciate that. Here's another guy that's done a lot. Dart Fletcher. Good morning, Dart.
Hey, good morning, Pete. Good morning, gang.
Hey, right? Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Nice to hear your voices.
You too.
You just got back from El Salto.
That's a big 10-4, and we had a really fun trip. A fun trip, but it was kind of a mixed bag. We didn't get as many big fish down there. I think there was a 10 and a couple of 9s and maybe an 8 or 2 among the whole. We had 12 guys in our group, but it was lots of 2s and 3s and a fair amount of 4s. And my son Rob got his personal best. He got a 7-pound, 3-ounce bass. And
nice.
But he also got a 7 and a 5-11 and a 4.5 and
wow.
a 4, and I got a few up to 5, but I was not in the game like Rob was. He was really hot.
What was the hot one on the big ones?
Well, we fished a lot of Senko because it was just slower at certain times. One day, Rob and I fished in the afternoon, and between us we got 2 fish.
Wow. That's tough down there.
And another day we had 44 in the morning and 64 in the afternoon, and lots of 3s, couple of 4s and 5s, and Rob got that 7-3. So
nice.
It was, and then we had rain one day in the afternoon. It poured rain on us, Fortunately, we were pretty well protected with the gear, and we just kept fishing. And a lot of fish on the swim bait. I was using the 3.8-inch Kytec swim bait on a scrounger head, and that combination really was effective in certain places. There was lots of threes and twos and just a lot of good fish, not very many small ones. You had to go to a certain area in the lake to get anything like 7, 8, 9, 10 inch, and we didn't go there much.
Roger, well, it sounds like a good trip.
Great food, most of the time good weather, and this was my 12th year and my son Rob's first, and it won't be his last and probably won't be mine.
Okay, good, Dart. That's good news. Well, thanks for that report. That's awesome. I'm glad you had
fun.
Absolutely. All right.
And great show. I mean, this is fascinating. I'm learning stuff after all these years that I just didn't know. So thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dart. Appreciate that very much, Bob.
Bye-bye. Thanks,
no, definitely some good info. We're going to have more info when we come back, and we'd like for you to join us, 877-792-1090 or 858-4570. We're going to hear more from Lyle, more from Elena when we come back, and Let's Talk Hookup on the Mighty 1090.
Here's John Ireland for Rancho Leonero.
You know, the ranch is unique. It's one of the few places in the world where you can still drive ATVs up the beach. We have fishing from the beach. We have dive trips that we run to Pomo in a number of different spots. Kayaking, of course, has been real big. We were one of the first hotels to introduce kayaking. The ranch is small, you know, it's intimate. It's 34 rooms, so everyone gets to know everyone. The old saying, where everyone knows your name. Well, truly at Rancho Leonero, the employees do know pretty darn near all our guests' names. And what's even more interesting is most of the guests know each other's names. Very personal, very intimate, and a special, special environment. 2 miles of beachfront, a mile on either side of the hotel. Rancho Leonero is really the last of the old-style Baja fishing resorts. 1-800-646-2252. 1-800-646-BAHA. And RanchoLeonero.com. I'll personally guarantee your best fishing experience and vacation at Rancho Leonero.
When it comes to fishing rods for saltwater, there's just one name you need to know, Calstar. Take, for example, the Graphiter series. It's a true graphite and fiberglass composite rod, the finest it's ever been built. And for anglers seeking traditional performance, durability, and quality at an affordable price, the Calstar West Coast series of rods and blanks are the ones for you. Their master craftsmen bring decades of rod building experience to every rod they make. So if you want your fishing rods to be truly state-of-the-art, I always recommend Calstar at fine tackle stores everywhere.
It's long range time at the Ridge and Lower Banks. Time to get your gear. Hi, this is Doug Kern from Fisherman's Landing Tackle, the saltwater tackle professionals. Big fish need big tackle, and that's why we recommend the Shimano Talica for tuna, Trinidad for wahoo, matched with a Therese rod. Choosing the right size Talica, Trinidad, and Therese is the trick, and that's where we come in, with more experience and expertise on long range fishing than anyone. Fisherman's Landing Tackle has the Shimano gear for your long range trip. Fisherman's Landing Tackle at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego or on the web at saltwatertackle.com.
Have you been looking for a live bait hook that keeps live bait alive? Look no further than Japan's leading fish hook, Gamakatsu. It's the little things that make the difference, and Gamakatsu hooks drive the point home. With an absolute perfect bend and ideal barbs, your bait swims harder and longer. And when you get bit, Gamakatsu hooks bite back with a vengeance. All hooks are not the same. Go with Gamakatsu for infinite success. Gamakatsu. Simply the best. Check Gamakatsu.com.
There's nothing more peaceful than fishing. Just me, my pole, and some bait. Oh, and my life jacket, of course. I like fish, but I don't want to end up at the bottom of the water with them. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
All right. All right. Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Having a fun time in here. And Lyle and Elena. And
such a great show, man. There's so much. And we got a lot of people on hold wanting to talk to them, but in the meantime, we have the catch report today.
Let's do it. The report is sponsored by Blue Guard Innovations, making smart bilge pumps and switches and sensors designed to protect you, your vessel, and the environment. If your boat lives in the water and you don't have it installed, the BG1 oil fuel detector, you could be risking thousands in fines. BG1 will detect oil in your bilge before you dump it into the water. Just one of the several switches and sensors made by Blue Guard Innovations. Check BlueBGI.com.
BlueBGI.
There it is. Thank you.
Yep.
To get their affordable products at Wilson Marine or San Diego Marine Exchange. And
yeah,
you know,
San Diego Marine Exchange has the BGI-1, yeah, right now. So check it out. It's an amazing device. I have it on my boat, and it's really a lot of peace of mind that knowing that I'm not going to be dumping fuel in just in case something happens.
Right, and it just has a way of sensing it and letting the water go and stopping when the floating debris might be going over.
Yeah, for sure. Good morning, Brian Willie, Dana Wharf Sport Fishing. Morning, Brian.
Sure, no doubt about it.
There you are. Good morning.
Hey, just an update. That sheephead limit's 5 fish. I think I heard 10 earlier.
Oh,
not a big deal, but I just
go.
All right, that's good. Good thing. Anyway, so it's a five fish limit on sheephead.
5 fish.
So yeah, it counts as like, and that's, is that true with rockfish too, 5 fish limit?
Well, you got 10 rockfish in aggregate, certainly, you know.
10 rockfish in aggregate. Five fish limit on the sheephead, though.
Correct. Yep. Good stuff.
Good info.
Well, hey, this week we good bottom fishing continued to be the standout for us on our 3/4-day trips. You know, we've been fishing that deep hard bottom, that San Onofre, Camp Pendleton, that north, super north county zone has been the spot for us down there. Some great action, good counts on the vermilions and the bocaccio rockfish with a nice mix of some whitefish and some other mixed rockfish filling out the counts for us. We're telling our guys a good medium action rod with a 300 size reel filled with 50 pound braid, facility to, you know, tie a monofilament leader on there to fish the dropper loops. And if you want to switch over to a jig, Colt Sniper jig or something, it's just a real seamless transition. Cut the leader off and go for it there. In the half day zones, you know, the cooling water temps, we're starting to see things tighten up just a little bit. You know, however, we've got some real nice sheephead caught this week. Speaking of those things, we're telling our guys, and, you know, this could ring true for anyone fishing out of any landing right now, a little preparation with packing a little bit of shrimp or some clam for an alternative bait has certainly been paying off for the guys that are fishing with us. We're seeing some real nice sheephead caught on that exotic bait, as well as some real nice trigger fish and, of course, some sand bass, too. So just a little food for thought, a little option. But certainly the cooling water temps slowed down our surface action on the calico bass. That stuff tightened up a little bit, but we're still catching stuff. Pretty much, I'd say all the stuff on our half day right now is being caught on the sinker down near the bottom there. Our halibut derby's kicking along real steady. A few nice fish still again for their efforts this week. The Clemente's out there this morning, hopefully catch a few and mix things up on the derby leaderboard. And this fish continues to fill in along the beach. In fact, even out rockfish zone again this week, another nice 18-pound halibut caught on the squid strip, believe it or not, out there fishing for rockfish. So good sign with that stuff in deeper water and, again, moving into the shallower stuff. So we're staying busy, keeping boats away from the dock. If you guys want to hop on a trip, give the landing a phone call. Our number here is 949-496-5794. Of course, you can check us out on the web, too, danawharf.com. And, again, we urge you guys use this discount code SAVE, S-A-V-E. That'll save you 25% on one of these half or three-quarter day trips this time of year. And then, again, remember, we have the two kids fish free through the rest of this month with a full fare paid adult. So it's been a good thing to see. We've seen lots of kids on the boat the last couple weeks. So get them on out here and come catch them
with
fish.
That's such a great deal. Two kids fish free with a paid adult and SAVE, a 25% off code and half and three-quarter. You guys are awesome. Dana Wharf Sport Fishing. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate that. We'll talk to you during our Christmas spectacular next Sunday.
Looking forward to it. It's always a good one.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
All right.
Now, Brian, next week you should have like some kind of a take or something like that, a song or a poem or something, like a Dana Wharf song or something.
We'll have to get him a calico jingle.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Maybe Gundy will come up with something like that. Huh, Gundy? What do you think? Like a surf fish jingle?
Yeah, maybe so. I'm going to have to think about that one.
Yeah.
Hey, that sheephead fishing out of Dana Point, that's sleepy good, you know. That's that little stretch there this time of year produces some quality fish. And like you were saying, those exotic baits, you know, like the mussel and the clam and things like that. And that goes as well for the surf fishers, you know. You're near rock anywhere, near reef up there in Laguna or something, you always stand a chance with a sheephead. Anyways, let's get rolling with it. Not a bad week of fishing. The water temp's still hovering around the low 60s, so there's still several species in play. The first is barred perch, and that bite's really gaining steam. A lot of 2-pound models coming from that northern front this week. Lots of catches up and down the coast on the barred perch. The halibut are still active in the shallows. right now more fish than anglers, you know, not many guys going after them, but the guys who are putting in their time are getting them. The croaker bite was good this week, yellowfin, spotfin, had several corbina caught this week. You know, I always think of 62 degrees is the Mendoza line on those corbina. Anything below, you start seeing them disappear, and there's still some 62, 63 stretches, and there's fish in them. Hook, line, sinker up there reported good perch action. Most beaches, Goleta, Gaviota, East Beach, producing fish to pound and a half. Gulp, bloody color, sandworms were hot. Wiley's reported good perch action. Below Magoo, White Sands, fish to 2 pounds, taking on shrimp and mussel. Silver Strand was another hot spot, kicking out a 2-pound, 4-ounce fish on a motor oil grub. Just Fishing and Redondo reported good barred action on Venice and Manhattan beaches. Gulp, sandworms, grubs, mussel working best. Big Fish at Seal Beach reported good mixed bag fishing on bloodworms. Anglers catching spotfin, yellowfin, barred perch, and a handful of corbina up to 2 pounds there. Catch Some Tackle reported good grub bite on perch. The wedge all the way down to the pier, that stretch, real good grubbing area there. Clear Red Flake, root beer colors, the best. Pacific Coast reported some good halibut catches in the lagoon down there off San Diego. Fish to 28 inches. Taking small swim baits, darker patterns was the word I got. Del Mar, best bet for perch there. Blue Water reported excellent croaker bite on lugworms, a few spotfin to 3 pounds, and several quality yellowfin taught by a 4-pound, 10-ounce yellowfin croaker. So 60-degree water, you know, still some of those other species hanging around, and then the barred perch action gaining steam, pretty darn good for December, I would say.
Yeah, no kidding, Gundy. Really good fishing there. December, the water's still warm. I mean, I was out surfing the other day. It was 62.5 degrees.
How do you beat it?
In late December, right?
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
That is pretty good. I like the way you say that, Pete. You said you were out surfing. My buddy describes it as I tried to surf.
Yeah. Well, at 63, I'm still trying.
That's great.
Started when I was a teenager and still trying at it, right?
Yep, you got it. You got it. That's what it's all about.
You bet.
All right, you guys have a happy holidays. We'll talk to you for that big extravaganza next
week.
Yeah,
man. Make sure you have that big take for us next Sunday.
Yeah, I'll work on a jingle, I guess.
All right, Gundy. Thanks, buddy.
Have a good one, guys.
Yeah,
all right, Gundy. My favorite report of the week, every week. And today, like every week, is sponsored by Bill Varney and his 2019 CCA Sport Fishing Tide Counter is now out at the landing stores throughout California. The back of the counter has a unique number, giving you a chance to win prizes each month. Here on the show, we'll announce it. You'll find the calendar at Fishman's Landing, the Longfin, Turner's, or at surffishtackle.com if you can't find it at your local tackle store. And I think that's that. You got to go get one yourself. When we come back on Southern California Sport Fishing Voice, we'll be right back on Mighty 1090 with Let's Talk Hookup. More from Lyle, more from Elena.
Rock Cod Rick here for West Coast Marine and Parker Boats. You see them all over Southern California waters. Parker Boats at the launch ramp, the offshore islands. You wake up in the morning on an overnight trip, and there they are. Parker Boats of all size fishing in the same area as the sporties. There's a good reason for it. Fishability and seaworthiness. Of all the boats out there, my boat partner and I chose to get a brand new 25 Parker center console from Kevin Kelly and the gang at West Coast Marine, and I could not be happier. Wow, what a fishing machine. Parker Marine builds a heavy-duty, industrial-strength boat, probably overbuilt, but that's why so many 4 and 6 pack charters choose to operate Parkers. We thank the guys at Pinnacle Sport Fishing, Season Sport Fishing, One Man Charters, Black and Blue Sport Fishing for their confidence in Parker boats. Take it from me, if you are ready for a new Parker at a fair, upfront, and honest deal, you need to see Kevin Kelly at West Coast Marine, located at 1555 Newport Boulevard in Costa Mesa, or check out their inventory and information at westcoastmarine.com.
Let's talk candidly about long-range fishing. This is Captain Frank Lopresti of the Royal Polaris and the Shogun. Nowhere on earth will you find a fleet of long-range boats like we have in San Diego. We are fortunate to have several top-notch operations to take you to the most productive fishing grounds in the world. We all offer good food, comfortable staterooms, huge bait capacity, and top-of-the-line fish-finding electronics. So why would you choose the Royal Polaris or the Shogun for your next long-range trip? What sets us apart from the rest? It's pretty simple. The boats, the crew, and the service. From the moment you arrive at Fisherman's Landing, the service begins. We help you load your gear and do everything possible to get beginners or seasoned veterans ready to catch fish. When it's time to fish, the Royal Polaris and the Shogun have the edge there too, delivering the two best fishing platforms in the fleet. But don't take my word for it. Come fishing with us. If you want the best, it's Royal Polaris and the Shogun. For more information, call 619-226-8030 or on the web at royalpolarissportfishing.com or shogunsportfishing.com.
When it comes to catching big bluefin tuna in local waters, Shimano has the gear proven to land the big ones. You already know the hot jig is the Shimano Butterfly Flatfall Jig, and when you match that with the right tackle system, it makes this great jig even more effective. We suggest you grab a Trix 500 HG and fill it with 80-pound Power Pro Max Quattro. Max Quattro is 25% thinner, which means 25% more line capacity when you hook that giant. Match your new setup with a Therese 70H and you have the power to put the wood to that big bluefin tuna. The Trix 500 HG has the cranking power you need, and with the level wind, you concentrate on fishing your Shimano flatball and leave the line control to the Trix reel. Hundreds of big fish have been caught on the flatfall, and when you add the Power Pro Max Quattro Trix Therese combo, you'll take your fishing to the next level. See your local dealer or check Shimano.com for all the details.
XSRS 1090 AM Rosarito, Baja California.
San Diego's sports leader.
The home of ESPN Radio.
The mighty 1090.
You've heard all about it. You know the angler's catching fish habit, so what's holding you back? It's a fact. FishDope.com really does help you catch more fish and burn less fuel. FishDope.com is the only fish finding service with a spotter plane along with a crew of top anglers on the water almost every day that report actual locations and catches. You can get daily catch reports from Point Conception to San Martin Island 365 days a year. FishDope.com is for everyone, whether you have your own boat, fish on your friend's boat, or a sport boat. FishDope.com has online planning tools, moon phase, tides, hot bite icons, and more. So bottom line is, if you don't have FishDope.com, well, you're probably missing a lot of bites. Membership costs less than $50 of gas, and that's for the entire year. That's right, 1 year. What a bargain! Plus, use the special code to save $20 on a new FishDope.com membership. Check it out today. FishDope.com. Catch more fish, burn less fuel. Quality is the name of the game at Seaforth Sport Fishing in Mission Bay. Free parking and fully stocked tackle shop, plus a great fleet. It's no wonder Seaforth Sport Fishing is a favorite among anglers. Come aboard top boats like the Aztec, Cortez, Endeavor, Apollo, Outer Limits, El Gato Dos, Pride, Tribute, Tomahawk, Prowler, Pacific Voyager, and the Voyager. Plus, the new Seaforth, Sea Watch, and San Diego offer the finest half and full day trips available. Seaforth Sport Fishing. For charters or regular open party schedule, check seaforthlanding.com. Run by fishermen for fishermen in Mission Bay. There is an undisclosed paradise waiting for you in your own backyard. It's the La Misión Hotel in beautiful Loreto, Baja California. Experience one of the few towns that has truly kept the spirit of old Baja. Combined with the luxury of a five-star hotel, old mission traditions, authentic lifestyle, and a wealth of Mexican culture still lives at the La Misión Hotel. Situated on the water and just steps from the harbor, take advantage of the fantastic fishing and natural beauty of the Sea of Cortez and the islands of Loreto. Loreto has long been known as the Dorado capital of the world, but huge tuna, wahoo, marlin, yellowtail, and pargo are abundant too. La Misión Hotel can set up affordable fishing trips, dive packages, and family fun adventures to enjoy the rich natural abundance of Loreto. La Misión also has a fantastic spa. Fine dining at Los Olivos restaurant and the famous pizza grill will amaze and stimulate your palate. Relax, fish, and enjoy the beauty and adventure of Loreto at the La Misión Hotel. Fishing and other very affordable packages are available. Once you go, you're hooked. Check LaMisiónLoreto.com for details. La Misión, the beauty and fun of Loreto, is waiting for you.